Well, once again, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Groovin' Radio. My name is Ras Clem, and we are in our featured segment now. It is called Mic Check. As usual, ladies and gentlemen, we continue sparking global changes around the world. This morning, we are going down to Jamaica. The conversation, Jamaica's parliament, your allegiance, your commitment, who should serve in the country's government. This morning, we will be joined by Mr. Attorney at Law, Dr. Christopher P. Malcolm. Dr. Malcolm is a senior lecturer and deputy dean for graduate studies and research in the faculties of law at the University of the West Indies Mona campus. Mr. Malcolm has been admitted to practice or also practice law in Jamaica, the British Virgin Islands, Dominica, St. Lucia, Belize, Barbados, and Trinidad and Tobago. He is our very special guest this morning, ladies and gentlemen. So I welcome, for the first time to Groovin' Radio, Dr. Christopher P. Malcolm. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning, Rutland. Thanks for having me on, and I'm thankful to your listeners wherever they are.
Yes, indeed.
Joining us this morning.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. First and foremost, sir, how is Jamaica this morning?
Well, it's hot and threatening to get even hotter as the day progresses.
Well, we're kind of warm on this side, but you know, Jamaica is a beautiful place, and by now Jamaicans should understand that things and times are changing. And when I come to Jamaica, I kind of feel the heat rise up a little bit more, but it's a beautiful thing. We woke up this morning, and that is the greatest thing. We have life, and I do hope that everything is good with you, sir. Now, the conversation this morning, and welcome again to Groovin' Radio. And ladies and gentlemen, this conversation, you know, it's a conversation that we must have, and it surrounds allegiance and commitment and who should serve in Jamaica's government. And it's also stemming from the fact that more and more you're hearing about dual citizenship. So this is where we're going to start this morning, Doc. This is where we're going to start this morning. Allegiance and commitment. How important is that to anyone who wants to serve in government in Jamaica?
Probably we need to start a bit from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Jamaica, as you know, was established as a colony. And in fact, if you look at our constitution, it says that it was a constitution which was granted as a statutory instrument in 1962, and I'm looking for what it actually says.
Mm-hmm.
It's statutory instrument, and it's 1962, number 1550 for Caribbean and Northern and North Atlantic territories.
Mm-hmm.
And the word territory is critical, eh? Because what happened at the time is that Jamaica, prior to independence in 1962, was a colony of the United Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
British territory. And so when the Constitution was formed, the question of dual citizenship certainly did not contemplate, for example, England or even the broader Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
Because England, as you know, or Britain, as it was, the British, was that empire which was known to have been the one on which the sun never set, because it was so broad and they always tried to keep as many in it as possible. And even when the constitutions were granted at that time, they provided for some level of continuing commitment to the crown, and we still have that. We still have the monarch as our head of state. We haven't sort of jettisoned that yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have the Judicial Privy Council as our final court of appeal. And there are a number of other attachments that still continue. So I say all of that to say the question of allegiance,
mm-hmm.
is one which, when you look at Sections 39 and 40, of our constitution,
mm-hmm.
they provide really that you should not have allegiance to a foreign power, but the Commonwealth territories are really not considered in this context, as you read it, to be foreign power.
Right.
So it does provide under 39 that persons who are Commonwealth citizens, provided you meet certain criteria and you have been resident in Jamaica for at least 12 months prior, You may, in fact, be able to serve in our parliament. It does not, however, extend to countries that are not part of the Commonwealth. So we need to get that straight as a matter of law.
Right. And you know, again, it depends on who's interpreting this and how they interpret this, because you mentioned Section 39, you mentioned Section 40. And, you know, it is also said that if you're from a Commonwealth country, you're able to serve in Parliament in Jamaica. You know, so it is kind of... Again, the interpretation here is key, and the mere fact that Dr. Malcolm, folks who were born in Jamaica before August 6, 1962, yeah, up until a certain point, they were known as British subject, because they were known as British subject. This subject matter here, it gets sticky now, because now we have the opposition leader, Mr. Mark Golding, who was born in Jamaica. In 1965, July 1965, and derives British citizenship from his dad. And again, Jamaica is still a part of the Commonwealth. And you mentioned that the monarchy still is head of the Commonwealth. So where do we go here? Is it now really leaning on Mr. Golding or anyone else? You know, anyone else? Their allegiance and their commitment to Jamaica? And should anyone who wants to be the leader of Jamaica now, should they relinquish their citizenship if they're British?
All right, I answered you firstly by reference to the law. I'm a lawyer, as you have said. And my starting point is to remember that we are governed by the law. We are a country under the law, and we're subject to the law, right? So our starting point is to say, what is the law? And how are you compliant with the law? And I make that point because the truth is, the only real protection for anybody anywhere in the world is the protection of the law. There are three critical arms of government in our democracy. And the only one that is established particularly to ensure that there is some level of protection between the relative powerlessness of the people and the relative might of the executive and the legislature and so on, is the court. And the court is a court of law. It is not a court of morality. It's not a court of anything else. It's a court of law. Our starting point must be, what is the law? And we must remember that it is the law that protects us. Without the law, we are thrown to slaughter. If you ask me a different question as to what is my view on the question of dual citizenship outside of the law, my answer is very clear, and without water in my mouth, I say, if you are a dual citizen and not fully committed to Jamaica as a citizen of Jamaica and of nowhere else, you should not serve in our parliament. That is my position. Mm-hmm. But that is not a position that is reflected by our law. And I have to remember that whatever my personal opinions may be, until such time as the law is changed, I am subject to the law and I'm duty bound to honor the law.
This topic has been an ongoing topic for quite some time. And, you know, there are folks who thought that this dual citizenship subject was based on the fact that it's based on the fact that folks who migrated to the United States and pledged their allegiance and became a U.S. citizen, you know, knowing that America is not a part of the Commonwealth, a lot of folks were focusing only on the U.S., not knowing that this would have arrived and be presented one day. And now we have this situation, because there are other members of parliament who had to relinquish their citizenship. They were a U.S. citizen, and they had to let go of that to serve in parliament in Jamaica. So now, following the law, if we're following the law in Jamaica, yeah, if we're following the law in Jamaica, It's clear, and it should be that no one who wants to serve at a high government level in Jamaica should have any allegiance to any other country. So, but counsel, no, and keep on your counsel cap here, Attorney Malcolm. Those who have a green card, a green card and can leave Jamaica at any time, where do we go? Where do that stand now? Where does that stand in Parliament in Jamaica?
Well, I'll tell you what, that is an interesting question, because, and perhaps I'm going to answer you now by reference to my own feeling, which again is not necessarily supported strictly by the law. But my position is this, you know, I am less concerned, quite frankly, about whether you hold 3, 4, 5 or however many passports than I am about whether or not you're fully committed to this country. I say that to say, you may, for example, hold a Jamaican passport as your only passport, and you're here serving in our parliament, but you maintain your residence in Florida or in Maine or in New York or wherever. Your family's there, and all of your resources are there, and all you have in Jamaica are your liabilities and your assets are abroad. I say, if you fall in that category, you are much worse, as far as I'm concerned, in service to Jamaica than somebody who holds multiple passports, yet is in Jamaica, committed to Jamaica, and giving service to Jamaica in a genuine way. And I tell you something which I want to take a little further, because it's the elephant in the room that we very often don't speak about or speak about enough. I ask the question, and I hear that, I know there's a push in the diaspora, and I'm on a diaspora program at the moment, right? For persons who want to serve in our parliament in Jamaica. And as a lawyer now, taking my lawyer hat and my, more importantly, my law reform and policy expertise hat on, that's what I'm putting on now, I start with asking, what is the mischief? What is the real purpose for this? And I ask myself, what is there that causes someone in the diaspora to believe that the only way they can effectively serve Jamaica is by sitting in the parliament? What it is that somebody is saying that if I do not sit in the parliament, I cannot effectively serve? Why is it that someone is saying that there are not mechanisms that can put, be put in place to ensure, for example, that there's a minister in parliament, in sitting in the House, who is able to advocate and is required to bring specific bills which may emanate from the diaspora within a 90-day period? It must be laid, it must be tabled, it must be debated, and all sorts of things happen. And then you get consultation papers coming out of the diaspora and so on. What is it that prevents any of that? And if it is that the diaspora claim that we have technical or other services that we are able to offer, what is it that prevents that happening without service? What I have a problem with is anyone coming into the House of any country, quite frankly, sitting down, making laws, and when the pots turn over and the fire starts to blaze, they are the first out. They have no burn to take, because all they have are liabilities, and they don't care whether the liabilities crash and burn. That I have a problem with. And I will invite any member of your diaspora, any member anywhere, to debate this question with me anytime, any day of the week.
I hear that loud and clear. But what about a Jamaican? What about a Jamaican who only have a work visa, works in the diaspora, and travel back and forth to Jamaica, and is speaking from the diaspora side how much they can help and how much they can offer to Jamaica? Would that be okay for one of those?
You have to remember the work visa, that is not dual citizenship, so that question doesn't even arise of dual citizenship in that instance. But the question still becomes, you know, if you are living wherever you are. You know, let me put another hat on before I answer this question fully. At one point, for my sins, I was the Attorney General of the British Virgin Islands, and it was a contract position, meaning I had no political allegiance one way or the other, and it was a job which came by reference to the fact that I was British Virgin Islands. I was headhunted for the job. I went there. I did it for 3 years. Right? And the point is, I was able to sit in their house and sit in their cabinet and observe what happens. I can speak about politics, not just there, but elsewhere, by some level of intimacy and what actually happens and the horse trading nature of cabinet proceedings and everything else. I can speak about it by reference to that. To be there is a small thing. And I could say the same for a number of other countries, quite frankly. If you are BVI and you aspire to sit as a member of the House of Representatives, you dare not put yourself up for office unless you live in the constituency If you want to get our boats, you must suffer the roads that we have, suffer the water crises and whatever else that we have. And if you're not prepared to do that, let us get somebody who live among us to be able to do that.
Wow.
If that's something I admire, I do.
Indeed, indeed. Well, you put a challenge out, and I just got a challenger. And seems to be it's one of your family member. Her name is Tanisha Malcolm. She says, I welcome the opportunity to challenge and debate you on this one. So I think I'm going to make the connection when this program is over. Her last name is Malcolm, just like yours. Again, she says, I welcome the opportunity to challenge and debate him on this subject matter. And as a matter of fact, he seems to be my family. So...
I know, I'll tell you, Ralph, as a litigator and somebody who has been involved in litigation for long enough, I can say, tell me whenever, the time, the place, I'm always available.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Groovin' Radio. The challenge is on as we continue to spark global changes around the world and in our beautiful island of Jamaica. The conversation this morning: Jamaica's parliament and who should serve in the country's government, what kind of allegiance and commitment you should have. You know, commitment is something. What about someone who is fully committed? Because, for instance, Mr. Mark Golan, the opposition leader, was born in Jamaica. He's somewhere in his 50s. He was born in 1965, I think. So he should be around 58, 59 years old. Born in Jamaica, lived in Jamaica all his life, studied abroad. Yes, went to England, study. Yes, he derives British citizenship from his father. But he has spent 95 or 96% of his time in Jamaica. And he said he's committed. And again, the mere fact that he was born in Jamaica and lived in Jamaica all his life. I mean, do you think an individual such as Mr. Golan can be fully committed?
Let me start back and go back to where I was.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, the questions relating to Mr. Golan is a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Golan does not fall in the category of somebody living in Maine, New York, New Jersey, or wherever,
mm-hmm.
who thinks that he should live in New York, Maine, New Jersey, or wherever, and hold a seat in the parliament in Jamaica.
Right.
Let me put it another way. Mm-hmm. You live in the U.S. There are a number of dual citizens in the U.S., in the U.S. Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them on the Republican side, even more on the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them hold dual citizenship with Israel. The majority.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them maintain their residence in Israel and still sit in the House of Congress? Zero.
Mm-hmm.
How many of them, in fact, I was looking recently at some recent legislation that came out of your Congress there.
Mm-hmm.
And it made clear that, yes, you may be a dual citizen and you may change. I could pull it up, but I don't have it right before me at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But what the critical point is that you must demonstrate that you pay taxes here. You must demonstrate a number of things. And the question I have is, in the instance of those persons who are in the diaspora wanting to serve, how many of them are prepared
mm-hmm.
to do, for example, what you had in Singapore? Singapore says that you cannot be even a dual citizen of Singapore, in that they say here, if you decide to live out of Singapore for, I think it is 10 or 12 years, whatever the period is, you must give up the Singaporean citizenship because you no longer need your passport. But they go further. They say anybody who comes into Singapore and is a citizen of Singapore, be it by birth, naturalization, or whatever, once you live there for at least 10 years and you show commitment to Singapore, you can serve in their house. It's a model I admire.
Mm-hmm.
Do I admire many other things about Singapore? No, I don't. There are many things about Singapore I have a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been there a couple of times and I've observed what happens there.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I'm making is that this is a situation where for small states, we need to bear this in mind. It is not the same as for large states. So I hear people, for example, say that the current Prime Minister of Wales was born in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, oh, here's evidence of somebody born there and is here in the UK. But I say this. I have been to Zambia a couple of times and I have quite a few Zambian friends.
Mm-hmm.
When I hear the Prime Minister of Wales speak, I hear nothing in him that sounds Zambian.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds British. I lived in England for a while. Both my LLM and PhD were done at the University of London. I've been around England, I know enough. Mm-hmm. When I hear him speak about Zambia, but more importantly, I say this and I challenge anybody to tell me to the contrary, that he would never, living in Wales and being Prime Minister, still maintain significant connections to Zambia. All he has related to Zambia is a birth, mm-hmm. quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that what we have happening, and we have to remember that small and large societies are quite different. The person in Jamaica who may keep his liabilities here and his assets in the U.S. is not going to do the same thing if he's a member of the U.S. Congress, he or she. And you can tell me of the persons of Jamaican or other descent who are members of the U.S. Congress, mm-hmm. and look at the statistics, look at the data, and tell me what you find out. And the person who plans to debate with me, I want you, when you come, to tell me about the positions of persons who are Jamaican and U.S. nationals who are serving in Congress, where they see their allegiance lying, where they see them in terms of where their holdings are, and everything else. I want you to come with that data, because I have a fair idea of what it looks like. Mm. That is the level of conversation I want us to have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Program note, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Grooving Radio. Yes, we are at the top of the 11 o'clock hour. You're listening to Mic Check. Our very special guest this morning is Dr. Christopher P. Malcolm. He is a senior lecturer, deputy dean for graduate studies and research in the Faculty of Law at the Mona campus of the University of the West Indies. He's also admitted to the bar to practice law in Jamaica, the British Virgin Islands, Dominica, St. Lucia, Belize, Barbados, and Trinidad and Tobago. The conversation this morning is who should serve in Parliament, the country's Parliament in Jamaica, and that's what we're focusing on. Before we took that little break there, Council, you mentioned dual citizens serving here in like the U.S. Congress and Senate and so on. When it comes to Jamaica, though, I am not 100% clear if the U.S. does recognize dual citizenship from Jamaica. I know Jamaica still recognizes it from the United States, but I'm not sure if the U.S. does recognize a person with two passports, especially if that passport is from Jamaica. And that is something that I'm going to have to look into.
I can answer you shortly because I've done my research. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
It does. Okay. Okay, so when we see persons like Yvette Clark, you know, our congresswoman from Brooklyn, who is, her mom is Jamaican, Una Clark, one of the first to serve in the city council in Brooklyn. Yes, she was recently honored by the Jamaican government with a national award, the Commander of Distinction. So she proudly wears her Jamaican colors here at times too. I see that. But I think the allegiance, you're right. I think their allegiance is right here.
You just mentioned Yvette Clark. Since you mentioned her, let me follow that. Mm-hmm. Do you conceivably so that Yvette Clark would live in Jamaica and maintain her position as a U.S. congresswoman? Tell me, give me a straight answer.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, fine. We stop there. We go further.
Yeah.
Do you see it even conceivably the case as being the case that Yvette Clark, being a U.S. congresswoman, would maintain her tax status and other things in Jamaica while serving in the U.S. Congress?
I don't think so.
Do you, as well, let me ask you a few other questions. And I'm a lawyer, so I cross-examine people sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Do you see it even conceivably as being the case that those persons in the diaspora, in the U.S. and so on, who are hoping to serve in the parliament in Jamaica will do what Yvette Clark would do in relation to Jamaica and simply bring back and take everything to Jamaica, including all of their lives, pack up their lives in the U.S., forget it and say, hip, hip, hooray, I am a dual citizen, but only in name, which is what, quite frankly, Yvette Clark is, if you were to be honest. Do you see that happening? And don't get me wrong, she represents Jamaica well.
Mm-hmm.
She is one of the ones we claim, but Jamaica claims everybody, mm-hmm. quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Want to be honest as well. But the question is, in functionality, because I tell people I'm a utilitarian by nature, I look at functional things. not by reference to simply the way things are said and everything else. What is the functionality? How many of those dual citizens wanting to serve in the parliament will commit at day one, and not just commit, but demonstrate it, that they're going to say, as of today, ta-ta, goodbye, I'm going to do what the dual citizens who serve in the U.S. Congress do and show that my commitment to Jamaica is so clear that I maintain nothing except probably a family home, except probably a vacation home in the U.S.
Well, I think I know a few who would do that. I think I know a few Jamaicans who are fully, fully committed to Jamaica and will pack up everything that they have and come to Jamaica and serve in Jamaica. And I've had a few friends of mine who have come to Jamaica seeking the opportunity to work in Jamaica, stay in Jamaica, and help Jamaica to solve issues. But you know, not given the opportunity, they turn around and came back. You know, but I have a few...
Let me ask you one. You say you know many who would today do that.
Not many, a few.
Okay, a few. So let me follow you on that trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
Why then, if they're so committed, don't they relinquish, since they want to serve in the House here, why don't they simply relinquish their U.S. nationality and come back and do it? Why don't they do it? Since they're so committed, why don't they do it?
Well, I mean, I don't know the reason why they haven't done it, but I...
No, man, stick with me for the minute. You say you know persons who have that level of commitment.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
they're not backtracking, because if they're that committed,
mm-hmm.
and the only impediment is whether or not they relinquish the U.S. passport. Relinquish it and come home, if you're that committed.
I see what you're saying, you know. I see what you're saying, but without getting that opportunity to do so, or without seeing it viable to a certain degree, I think that's a real...
Mm-hmm. You're going down my path. You're now weighing in the balance and talking about viability and so on. When you talk commitment, viability is not a word.
Mm-hmm.
Commitment is unconditional. So viability doesn't come in. Viability is your hedging.
Mm-hmm.
Hedging and commitment are not at all to be put in the same basket.
So you're saying...
So if you're talking commitment, it must be unconditional. If you're going to give me conditions, mm-hmm. you're not speaking commitment. You're not speaking the language of commitment.
I get you, sir. I get you. I get your counsel. I get you. You know, you put me on the hot seat, and I get your counsel. But it is true. It is true. So, and I think for some folks here in the diaspora who are advocating for certain things, I do think and I do believe that their commitment still lies here in the diaspora and not in Jamaica. Yes, they want to see better for Jamaica, but they'll tell you that they're fully committed and they're not really fully committed. And you're right, if they're that committed, they should relinquish whatever it is and come home and set up shop and serve there. But again,
and I am on the same page, and you know, I often hear people talk, for example, about philanthropy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I learned from, funny enough, from a white man, a very prominent white man in England, was to say, look, philanthropy is not to be treated for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who come to the philanthropist want to become sirs and this and that. They get some other benefit. So even though they may not get paid for it, there's a benefit that they're hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I am saying to you that if you want to serve, a title should not be the basis for service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if that is the basis only, by reference to which you want service to serve, then it means that commitment is not to the cause, but commitment to how you can,
mm-hmm.
for one reason or another, in one way or another, be personally advanced.
Mm.
So, and don't get me wrong. I am not against people and their personal advancement. I am for it. But I'm saying that we have to be mindful that mm-hmm. when you're talking about service, government is about service to the people, and if you're prepared to serve the people, you must be prepared to be among the people,
mm-hmm.
you must be prepared to be of the people,
mm-hmm.
and you must be prepared to suffer with the people. And part of the big problem we have with our development trajectory is that there are not enough of us who are prepared to, and I don't have a problem with people doing it,
mm-hmm.
but if I want to pack up and leave and go wherever I want to go, I don't have a problem doing it personally, and I wouldn't have a problem with you or anyone else doing it. But I have a problem if I want to hem and haw and to be deriving a position here, a position there, and be in the middle, and then knowing that when the problem arises, I simply pack and go. There's a natural disaster and an evacuation plane comes in, and you get on it and you wave goodbye to me, and I'm still here without electricity.
Two things I want to cover before we wrap up this conversation this morning, Council, and keep your council cap on, keep your council hat on. And again, based on the Constitution, someone could come to Jamaica from a Commonwealth country, wasn't born in Jamaica. This person is 50 years old, come to Jamaica on vacation, fall in love with Jamaica, and decide that I'm not going back to my country. And after a year, after 12 months, that person can become, if he or she chooses, can run for a government position. But when you look at that, and it's only based on the fact that they're coming from a Commonwealth country, and they have spent over 12 months straight in Jamaica, and decided to get involved with politics, and that carries more weight than someone who was born in Jamaica and lived in Jamaica for 50 years, but hold a British passport. Speak on that for me, please.
All right, let me answer you in this way. I have already said that we're a country of laws, and until such time as the law is changed, we are obliged to act by reference to it. I have also said I am against dual citizens from whatever other country serving. That's my personal position, right? But I am also going to say this, and this is true, that I have met persons, including in Jamaica, who were never born in Jamaica, who came to Jamaica, spent their lives in Jamaica, and gave more service to Jamaica than many I know. I went to Monroe College, and we had a vice principal there, Steve Harl. He died a few years ago, several years ago, by the way. He came to Jamaica as a young boy, never left Jamaica, and was here. He taught throughout. Ask anybody who had anything to do with Monroe. He called him Sadie. I know my own mentor in the practice of arbitration, Maurice Stuff. He came to Jamaica in 1957 or thereabouts from England. Never left. He died here and was buried here last year. Never left. He went all over the world. And everything else, he said, no, this is my home. And the level of service that he gave, that I can speak to, having benefited from him, there are few Jamaicans who can speak to that level of service and commitment to Jamaica. But I am not one to say that because you were born elsewhere, it doesn't mean that you can have and give service there. Look, in the case of the U.S., most of the U.S. has been built up, quite frankly, in your technological field and so on, if people want to admit it, by those persons who left the Soviet bloc and so on, who came there, and in recent years by Chinese and Indians and other people have come to build up a lot of the industries and so on that you've had. So the fact of birth in and of itself is not indicative of commitment or capacity to serve. But what I am more, and that is why I also said at the beginning, that I'm less concerned about passports than I am for service, because what Jamaica needs more than anything else is that we need committed people who are prepared to be sacrificial and will work long and hard for the sustainable economic development, who can help us, for example, to benefit from brain gain instead of destructive brain drain. There are a number of factors. And so when we're talking about the conversations, and that lady who wants to debate with me, those are the things I'm ready, willing, and able anytime I'm here to talk about. And I'm not forgetting, my memory is so long, it's an elephant. I won't forget. And I want to have something which is not about emotionalism and sentimentalism. It's about something which says, what is the objective? What are we looking at? And in law, we have this thing we call the mischief rule.
Right.
The rule in Hades, which says the first rule of statutory interpretation, extends into other areas. And the whole purpose about that is to say, look, when you're looking at a problem, you must determine what is the problem that you're hoping to solve. When the legislators drafted or persons made policy, what is the problem that they hope to resolve? And how do you go about it in a manner which helps you to resolve the actual problem that was created? Now, I'm here and I'm asking that these conversations focus more on what exactly are we hoping to achieve? and what are the best ways to achieve it? And is service in the parliament necessarily the best way to achieve it? And if the answer is yes, what are the critical reasons in support of that answer being yes? That is the way I think, and that is the way I believe. And as an academician and as a practitioner, that is how I function. I'm a utilitarian. Show me the utility of it.
But council, everyone has an agenda, you know. Everyone has an agenda. But I do think there are people who holds two passports who are committed, you know, who are very, very committed, you know, and probably is more committed more than those who are born and raised in Jamaica, you know. And it's just that they may have an agenda that you may not like or you may not know of, but I think every single person that walked this earth has his or her own agenda, and it's just for us to know what that agenda is. So the question you're asking is, what is the mischief behind some of these folks here, or these folks here in the diaspora who wants to serve in Jamaica? Maybe they should put their agenda on the table and make it clear what the agenda is, huh?
The agenda clear, I would say. One of the things we do very well is that we speak very well and speak in sentimental tones very often. I am certain that we need to move beyond that to a point where we can say, here is a carefully considered position. Here are the options that are available. Here is why, in the case of service in our parliament, let us use that for the moment, here is why it is inescapably required that there be active representation in our parliament. Here is how the service will be rendered. Here are the requirements that we think should be put on table. Here is how we are going to show commitment, not just to Jamaica and its development, but to the people. And a critical part, and again, let me put on my teacher's hat. One of the things you learn as a teacher is that I learned this when I was in high school early. They tell you that precept is better than concept. Bonnie White, now dead, who taught me chemistry, said, example is better than precept. What you do, how you do it, and how people are able to follow you by reference to your actions and by reference to what you demonstrate is much better than what you say and the precept that you take to what you do. Much more important. And I want to say to persons, look, I am Jamaican. And I am no more Jamaican than anybody in the diaspora, quite frankly. Let me say that. Let me put that on the table. But I also say that what we want in Jamaica are persons being able to see persons who are like them, struggling like them, making decisions for them. And we see that all the time, and we see it as educators, we see it, that part of the problem we, for example, have with the boys in our schools is that we see less and less male influence on teachers in our schools.
Right.
And that affects them. And the psychology is there. The psychological studies are there.
True. Well, this next part of the conversation may seem a little bit mischievous. Yeah? It may seem a little bit mischievous. And I'm going to go back to now. Our leaders who were born and raised in Jamaica serve as prime ministers in Jamaica. And they were born at a time before we gained independence, before August 6, 1962, when Jamaicans were known as British subject. I'm being mischievous here. Have we ever tried to find out if any of those leaders had a British passport? Has we ever?
But you don't have to go that far, you know. Right now in Parliament, forget Mark. There are others in our parliament with Canadian and British passports anyway, other than him. He's not the only one. And there have been others in the past, including persons who have served and are serving as ministers. So the truth, and that is why I'm saying, when we take these conversations, we need to look at them not by reference to the sentimentality of the day, but by reference to a well-considered position of what exactly is it that we're trying to achieve. And let me go back to say something else. I have said it. I am less concerned, even though my position is clear as to what I prefer. But I'm less concerned about the number of passports people hold than I am about seeing them in active practice and in active commitment being prepared to struggle with people and work with them on the ground and in their communities, day in, day out, night in, night out.
Mm.
That is what I'm more interested in. And I say this, the same congressmen and women that you speak about in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
Yvette Clark being one of them, I'm sure if there's something down in Flatbush or wherever her constituency is, she's going to be there, mm-hmm. and people will see her.
Indeed.
And see her often.
Indeed. 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 So what is the end game here, Council? What is the end game here? Because we have a new ministry in Jamaica, which was formed, I think, under about 2 years ago, Legal and Constitutional Affairs. And that is the ministry that is working towards, they say, to bring Jamaica to a republic. What is the end game here with all of this? Do you think, in the future, we will see where all of the connection that we have with Great Britain, all of that would be brushed aside, including the Privy Court and everything. Do you think that's ever going to happen?
I tell you what, I was in a particular conversation. A couple of things I do and have been doing for a while is organizing what I call a series of reasoning sessions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the last ones we had was on the 24th of April. We were the ones I organized.
Mm-hmm.
For you hear people talking about Lord Reed and what he came in to say and so on. I was the one who organized for Lord Reed to be involved in that and a discussion around. But when I was in a conversation then and I heard one prominent person say to another, when do you think this constitutional reform thing is going to lead to any real results?
Mm-hmm.
And the other responded to say, not in the life of this parliament.
Ah.
And the other laughed and said, you see, you're joking. Not in my lifetime or in yours. And the reason for that, quite frankly, is that there's a recognition that with all the talks that we're having, there's need for political consensus. And I also go further to say that in all the talk that we're having, we must also be mindful, regardless of what my personal views, agenda, whatever you call it, are, we also need to remember that ultimately this is about the people. And when we're speaking about the people, while we're the diaspora, which is critically a part of Jamaica, the primary people that we must be concerned about are the people living on the rock, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be mindful that we don't, by reference to our personal ambition, do anything without remembering that many of them do not have the capacity to get up and travel wherever and to escape the maladies that come their way. And if we're genuinely concerned about them, we must first think, how can we act in a manner with their best interest in mind? And that, for me, is the essence of service. And I think as we look at moving forward with constitutional reform or anything else,
mm-hmm.
which could take a while, but I say again in that one of the things I learned when I was looking at law reform, both in practice and certainly as a student, is that it can be slow and painstaking.
Mm-hmm.
And we should not try to rush it. They tell you in law, you hear the people saying all the time that justice delayed is justice denied. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also true that justice hurried is justice buried.
Mm.
And so you have to be mindful as you act and always bearing in mind who it is that you're hoping to serve and how best to serve them,
mm-hmm.
bearing in mind that there are many, the majority, in fact, who do not have an out.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones we must be most concerned about. Sadly, persons in leadership very often forget this. Regardless of what their own beginnings may have been, we sometimes tend to forget and believe that because I pulled myself up from the bootstrap,
mm-hmm.
somebody else must be able to do it. Life doesn't work that way. It depends on the opportunities we get. It depends on so many other things. But ultimately, let's focus on what matters. Not on our personal agendas, not on whether we want to get titles before or after our names and all sorts of things, but on what genuinely is in the best interest. And let us also remember
mm-hmm.
that when we do what we do, we should bear in mind that we should look for reward, not by reference to whether or not we get hailed here and there and honored here and there. That shouldn't be it. And if that is your reason for doing it, don't do it. In fact, I tend to say to people, you know, if you're going to give something to me personally and you expect me to thank you for the rest of your life, take it back. Don't give it to me because I will not do it.
Mm.
If you don't give it to me from the goodness of your heart, don't do it. And if you're doing it because you're expecting something out of me or anyone else, you are a hypocrite and you shouldn't do it.
You know, you talk about pulling yourself up by the bootstraps, but Dr. King will say, how do you tell a bootless man to pull himself up by the bootstrap? But you know, and I'm just quoting Dr. King here. How do you tell a bootless man to pull himself up by the bootstrap? Before we wrap this conversation, Dr. Christopher Malcolm, and who's also an attorney at law, our very special guest here this morning. And we're privileged, you know, folks. We're privileged to have such an esteemed guest here on Groovin' Radio this Saturday morning to have this conversation. You know, there's a saying here about kicking the can down the road. And I hope Jamaicans understand this. It's like bouncing the ball down the road. When it comes to constitutional reform in Jamaica, you know, based on what you just said, you know, and I've heard many people said this, that never in our lifetime, not in our lifetime, we're going to see this ever happen in terms of Jamaica becoming a republic. So do you think we're just bouncing the ball down the road, Council?
No. I genuinely think we're going to become a republic sooner rather than later. I genuinely think so. What I think the sticking point is now, and a big one, is a sticking point relating to our final court. And I think what has happened is that even though it was not required and still is not required by the Constitution as a result of the Syringa Marshall Burnett decision several years ago in the Privy Council, what had happened in short is that the government of the day had passed legislation to abolish the Privy Council and to instead take on the Caribbean Court of Justice as our final court of appeal. That decision was challenged and went all the way to the Privy Council. And the Privy Council effectively decided, in substance, that while there was no requirement for a referendum was the proper thing to do. So we have sort of locked ourselves in the need for a referendum. The problem with a referendum, frankly, is that getting one through in Jamaica or anywhere else without political agreement is almost impossible. And I give you an example. I remembered when Grenada had its last referendum on the Privy Council some years ago. I was actually in Grenada at the time. Keith Mitchell, as Prime Minister, his party held all 15 seats in Parliament. And there was a big roadshow. I recall the roadshow out in Grenada. I was there. I saw it. And they still lost the referendum because even though the opposition didn't have much of a voice in Parliament, you still had voices which were able to go. And before that referendum, I remembered walking through the markets and other places and just sounding with people what their views were. And I could tell they were going to lose the referendum. And the truth is also similarly in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, with all his friends in politics, Ralph Gonzalez has not been able to get through on a referendum, the CCJ, either. And I tell you, there are four countries that have now gone to the CCJ. Not one of them had a referendum. So a great critical roadblock to us getting the CCJ is, in fact, the fact that we have locked ourselves into a referendum. And I think unless you get the politicians agreeing on it, the referendum will likely fail. But if the politicians agree, and they're on a common platform, all saying the same thing to the people, we can get it. So it really comes down, in a sense, to political agreement. And when once that happens in a mature way, after mature consideration, I think we're going to get it. But I think we're edging closer and closer to that. And I am one for the CCJ. I'm not a monarchist by any means. And I think we need to get it as we seek to do what the late Duke Pollard said, Justice of the Caribbean Court of Justice, when he wrote this seminal work and spoke about closing the circle of independence, and the fact that one of the critical areas we need for closing that circle is a circle closed with us not having the Privy Council as our final court of appeal. People could argue about whether or not the CCJ is itself Jamaican and all. Those are other arguments to be made.
Right.
And I understand them. But I personally favor the CCJ, notwithstanding some counter arguments that could be made.
You know, I agree. I'm in total agreement. But, you know, some folks will think that because you have won all the seats and you're in government, and I'm going to give an example here. You know, when Barack Obama became president in 2007, started serving in 2009, you know, Barack Obama went to the White House with the Congress, with the Senate, and obviously the White House. Folks thought that everything would be peaches and cream for Barack Obama. Well, no, folks, it doesn't work that way, because not because you're a Democrat and, you know, your government is in place. There are people within that party who may not agree with everything that your agenda is. And it's the same thing down in Jamaica or any other Caribbean country, where not because you think you have all the seats or most of the seats in parliament, it means that everything you put on the table, you're going to get it passed. No, 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 no. It doesn't work that way. As you say, you must have political agreement. If you don't have that, it is not going to work. We do hope, though, we do hope that in our lifetime, we would see some major changes in Jamaica, including ridding Jamaica of the Privy Council and bring in the Caribbean Court of Justice. I'm going to ask you for a closing statement before we go this morning, Council. Your closing remarks.
Well, I know I may have stirred up a bit of controversy. It's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
As an academic, as an academic, putting on my academic hat, I like simple voices.
Indeed.
I like contending. So I'll take that one. But more importantly, though, what I want for us to do, and I'm happy that you're doing, is to have open conversations. Even if we don't agree, we don't have to be disagreeable about it. And I think it is important that we put the matters on the table, whether those views are the ones we share or not, have them properly distilled, and then come up with decisions which are properly reasoned. The worst thing you could ever do, or anybody could ever do, is to put positions, expect them to be pushed down anybody's throat without providing good reasons for them. One of the things we do by way of argument, there's a system of argument which we call PREZ, which is requiring you first to state a position, to indicate the reasons in support of your position, to cite examples that you're relying upon, and then to conclude. And that PREZ system of argument is one which says that you should not go into conflationary arguments and all the other sorts of things. So getting back now to center, I think as we're looking at this question of dual citizenship, we need, in my view, to have a clear position, not by reference simply to the question of passport, but by reference to what exactly it is that we're hoping to achieve and how it is that the dual citizens who are hoping to serve in our parliament, and when I say dual citizens, I primarily mean persons who live overseas, what exactly they're hoping to bring to the table, how they're able to bring it, how they're able to then show complete allegiance and commitment to Jamaica in doing it, and to determine by them, for them to indicate whether or not they're, for example, prepared to relinquish their existing nationalities. And the truth is, if they do that, the question of dual citizenship would not even arise. But we have to have a clear conversation, and that conversation must start not with personal ambition, quite frankly, but with what is best, not just by reference to technical skills that we can bring to the table, because there are multiple ways in which technical skills can be brought without your serving in the House, but by reference to what is the contribution and how, by my contribution and by my residence and other related factors, am I going to ensure that the people see and not just hear and not just believe that I am committed to the country called Jamaica and to help us to move to another day which can propel us further on the path to sustainable economic development. That is my objective, and that is the goal I hope we all serve.
Indeed. Our esteemed guest this morning, ladies and gentlemen, is Dr. Christopher P. Malcolm, Senior Lecturer and Deputy Dean for Graduate Studies and Research in the Faculties of Law at the University of the West Indies Mona Campus, a proud alumni of Monroe College, the University of the West Indies Cave Hill, Norman Manley Law School. I mean, your bio reads well, sir. St. Mary's University of London. We say thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much. And again, he's also an attorney at law who is admitted to practice law saw in Jamaica, the British Virgin Island, Dominica, St. Lucia, Belize, Barbados, and Trinidad and Tobago. Thank you so much, sir, for being a part of the conversation this morning. And we look forward for another one of these conversations. You know, like you said, it may be a little bit controversial, but it is good. It is always good to get into good trouble. And this is good trouble that we're putting ourselves in this morning. So I thank you so much for being a part of.
Yeah. I'd better say I look forward to the debate of the lady who challenged me. I look forward to it. I genuinely do.
Well, you know, her last name is Malcolm, you know, and my last guest this morning also, his name is Gregory Malcolm. A lot of Malcolms this morning connecting to Grooving Radio, but I am certainly going to make that happen. I'm going to make that connection between yourself and Miss Tanisha Malcolm. Okay, sir?
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful
day. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Blessings. It's a blessing to talk to you. Thank you, sir. Have a blessed day. One love, one love. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our featured segment. Mic check this Saturday morning. Our very special guest this morning was Dr. Christopher P. Malcolm. Yes, PhD, Dr. Malcolm, Senior Lecturer and Deputy Dean there at the Graduate Studies of Research of Law, Faculties of Law at the University of the West Indies. I'm going to take my final commercial break. When we come back, we will wrap the conversation. As a matter of fact, let me not do this. Let me take a musical break. And then when we come back, we'll find Gregory Malcolm.
Too much bloodshed. Make a whole of righteous mess. Just see all of the tears where the youths them shed. So we know I see no more bloodshed. Yeah, 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 yeah. Make a whole of focus on a righteous meds. Man shall not live alone by bread. Yeah, 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 yeah. Rise up on a new heights. Some blessings come in a disguise, yeah. So go and hold it at the meantime, and free my mind out on the seaside, yeah. Negativity we a decline. Overload on the good vibes, yeah. If we serve Jah, we never resign. By design, it divine, yeah. From life is here, then we have to think positive.
His name is Jeff Rosen.
And give thanks to the Most High.
Oh, it is called Righteous Meds. We just held one, you know.
Focus on a righteous meds. Man shall not live alone by bread. Yeah, 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 yeah.
It is Grooving Radio on a Saturday morning. It is IRAS Clem. Yes, I am.
Remember when it rains, Jah wash away your pain, Lord.
Indeed. Indeed. Hey, hey.
Just see all of the tears where the youths them shed. So we know I see no more bloodshed. Yeah, 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 yeah. Make a whole of focus on a righteous meds. Man shall not live alone by bread. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, ladies and gentlemen, as we held that focus this morning on that righteous meds that we were talking about coming out of Jamaica, know that it has been revealed that opposition leader Mr. Mark Golding holds a British passport, which derives from the fact that his father was from England. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, it is interesting, very interesting, that there are others in Parliament who has two passports. There are others in Parliament who also have a green card and can leave Jamaica at any given time. But I think because the political pendulum is swinging in Jamaica and swinging in the opposition favor, I think that's the reason why we're seeing these conversations now, you know. What do you think? Huh? What do you think? You can let me know, you know. Just give me a call. Yes, give me a call at 718-280-1747. That is 718-280-1717. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are now in our final segment. It is called Open Forum Community Talk. And this morning, in Open Forum Community Talk, we have a live guest. And the live guest this morning is from the Rossese Brothers and Sisters Foundation, Inc. And they're getting ready. As a matter of fact, we're in that mood right now. They're getting ready to present their Memorial Day weekend colors party and fish fry. It is a fundraiser, ladies and gentlemen, to help no other than the Rossese High School down there in Hanover, Jamaica. And how many of you know that Rossese High School was the first high school that my dear cousin, Merlin Otte, attended? One of the greatest sprinter ever to grace the face of the earth. My special guest this morning is no other than, yes, and a Rossese alumni, Mr. Gregory Malcolm has now joined us. Good morning, Gregory. How are you?
Yes, good morning, Brother Rasquim. I'm good. How are you?
I am blessed, man. As I like to tell my guests and anyone who asks me how am I doing, I woke up this morning, my 2 feet touched the ground, so I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. It could be worse, huh?
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear. And listen, much appreciate you continuing to bring the word to the broader Caribbean community. Much needed, brother.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much, Gregory. Let's talk Rossese Brothers and Sisters Foundation. Talk a bit about the foundation, how the foundation came together and why. That's where we start.
Yes. So the Rossese Brothers Sister Foundation was established in 2020. And it actually dawned out of, a small group of footballers, actually, who during the height of the COVID pandemic actually got together with a view to see what they could do for Rossese. Mm-hmm. The ambitions and aspirations got much bigger than they, then there was a need to organize more formally. Mm-hmm. And that's where myself and a few others got involved. Mm-hmm. So we've been incorporated in the U.S. We've been incorporated in Jamaica. We're actually established 501c3 charitable organization under the IRS regulation. So mm-hmm. what that means is, donations are tax deductible here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And the objective of the foundation is really to assist in the progressive development of Rossese High School and the surrounding community. It's all about providing opportunities for advancement of the school's educational, sports, and cultural programs, and to really just provide a positive and uplifting environment within the school that is conducive to enhancing the growth and development of the student body.
And that's a good thing, I love charities. I love nonprofit groups who can actually show what they're doing. And there's so many of these nonprofit groups who have done just noble work, not only in Jamaica. The mere fact that we are Jamaicans, we tend to always feature those coming out of Jamaica. But it's such a good thing. It's a great thing to see when, Gregory, folks like yourself can spend time doing the kind of work you guys are doing there at Rossese Brothers and Sisters Foundation. And it's not easy. And look at the time. Look at the timing of when this got started, in a very critical time, because never in our lifetime have we ever seen such a pandemic like the COVID-19 pandemic. And for the team to come together in such a critical time, it's very important. And it's eye-opening, folks, because those days were critical days, Gregory, huh?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the whole vision of being able to do something during that time, mm-hmm. Albeit people were spread out, all operating remotely, and just being able to mobilize to do what we're able to do was actually quite rewarding for me personally. Mm-hmm. But also with a view to how we could just uplift and provide support during that critical time.
Now the colors party. Now this is the weekend, the colors party for the Memorial Day weekend, and the fish fry. Tell us about it. It's a 2-day event, huh?
Yes. So
go ahead, Gregory. I'm hearing you, Gregory. I think we lost Gregory there. Yes, go ahead.
With these smaller foundations, clearly these ongoing fundraising activities are critical for us to continue to raise funds for a purpose. So mm-hmm. The Colored Fish Fry Parade actually starts today. So we've got a meet and greet today starting at 5 p.m. And then tomorrow we've got the fish fry party, actually, which starts at 1 p.m. And you know, it's offers music, food, you know, $30 for a meal, you know, whether it's fish, pork, or chicken. And the address is 3458 Bola Avenue. That's off Boston Road. Yeah, so it's come out. It's for a good cause, you know, but it also is an opportunity to gather and enjoy the weekend.
Mm. Talking about a good cause, you know, you talk about how this foundation came together with the footballers. And proceeds, ladies and gentlemen, is in aid of Rossi's High School and the Colin Miller Sports Complex down there in Hanover, Jamaica. So we're urging you today. It's going to be a beautiful day. It's nice outside. Sun and it's going to be sunny all day. A little bit of cloud rolls in later on. Tomorrow, it's the same thing. Sunny all day. So please support this event. 3458 Bola Avenue, right off Boston Road. It starts at 5 p.m. today, the meet and greet. Tomorrow, it starts at 1 p.m. until. And when they say until, you know, they're Jamaicans, you know, folks. So until, you just don't know. it could be until Monday, so you just don't know. So I am saying, folks, please support this event. Support Gregory and Troy and the rest of the team. They're going to be gathering over there. As a matter of fact, I think they're start gathering over there at 3458 Bola Avenue, preparing and waiting for you folks to go on out and support this. You know, again, it's for a very, very good cause. It is to support the building of the sports complex, the Miller, the Colin Miller Sports Complex down there at Rossi's High School in Hanover, Jamaica. Before you go this morning, Gregory, is there anything else you want to share with us?
Yeah, and I, you know, as you referred to Colin Miller Sports Complex, that is the major project we're working on.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole purpose of that, Russ Clem, is that, you know, is to really establish what is a state-of-the-art changing room facility and a conferencing facility
mm-hmm.
that the school could really utilize to host a number of big events, right? And again, it goes beyond sports, right? The school is able to generate funding from that complex that they could then reinvest into broader educational, sports, and cultural programs across the school. So whilst our purpose is to really establish this major sporting complex, you know, the school should be able to leverage this for much bigger things as we move forward.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, go ahead, Gregory. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I was just going to say, Russ Clem, that, you know, beyond the sports complex, obviously we've been doing a number of things
mm-hmm.
over the course of the past 3-4 years, right? So we've establish a learning platform during the height of the COVID pandemic that 2,000 plus students and 100 plus faculty could use to facilitate the online learning program during the pandemic. We've built a bathroom facility on the complex itself for the general public to use
mm-hmm.
during sports and events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've conducted oral health program, you know, partnering with the Colgate distributor in Jamaica
mm-hmm.
to run a dental clinic, you know, for examinations and cleanings, etc. So a number of things we've been trying to do across the course of the past 4 years,
mm-hmm.
you know, to continue to give back to the school and the community.
And that's a very, very noble thing to do, sir. You know, again, you know, there are many folks in rural areas in Jamaica who have never ever gone to a dentist, who have never seen a dentist. And, you know, having partnering with Colgate Jamaica and, you know, doing this kind of work, huh? What can I say? Folks, give Troy a call. Give Troy a call at 646-872-7879. That is 646-872-7879. Let him know you heard it right here on Groovin' Radio. And you would like to stop by the fish fry later on today, the color party tomorrow. You'd like to, and it's not just fish, you know, folks. It's not just fish. $30 for a meal. Whatever it is, chicken, pork, whatever it is, go buy and support this. This is for a very, very good cause, ladies and gentlemen. You can also call Carleen at 917-743-6667. That is Carleen at 917-743-6667. That is 6667, ladies and gentlemen. I thank you so much, Gregory, for being a part of this conversation this morning, sir.
Yes, thank you, Rest Clem. Again, you know, much appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share more about the foundation.
No.
And continue the good work.
Thank you, sir. No problem, man. We're just here to help and assist in any way possible that we can. Thank you so much, Gregory. You take care. One love, one love. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end. Yes, we have come to the end of all the conversations this morning right here on Groovin' Radio.